Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really, really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Perry Juliana Long. She's the author of a recently published book titled In Leah's Wake. This is a story about an upper middle class family with two daughters. Everything goes well until their eldest daughter, Leah, meets Todd, a high school dropout and a roadie for a rock band. Well, you can just imagine the turmoil this causes. If any of you are parents, you know exactly what you're going through. In the conversation with Terry, we're going to be discussing parenting issues and raising teens. Whoa. Please join us in listening to our discussion. But first, a little bit about Terry. Terry Juliana Long has written news and feature articles for numerous publications, including Indy Reader, the Boston Globe, and the Huffington Post. She lives with her family on the East Coast and teaches at Boston College. In Leah's Wake is her debut novel. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Irene.
Well, this is going to be a real pleasure talking to you. I'm excited about your book. It sounds like a really interesting novel. Before we go any further, how about just letting our listening audience know about the book? Maybe give us a brief synopsis?
First of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited, really excited about this. In Leah's Wake is a book about a family in disarray. So there's a mom and a dad and two children. The older daughter, Leah, is a really great soccer player. She's in line for some very prestigious scholarships. A lot of college coaches are looking for her. And there's a younger daughter, Justine, who's 12. She's a precocious kid and really looks up to her big sister. And it's a middle-class, upper-middle-class American family, the kind of family that, you know, you just, a lot of people tend to think there are no people that don't have problems. And but in this case, the older daughter meets just a guy who's kind of, he's a high school dropout. He worked for a while as a roadie for a rock band. And the parents think that he's just awful. And, you know, they try to get her away from him. And it becomes this kind of push-pull and communication breaks down. And the younger sister tries to go in and sort of save the family, and she's obviously not able to do that. And the parents are angry, and they're desperate. You know, they really want to save this kid and pull her back and put her back on track, but they can't seem to do it. And so they end up kind of in a battle to try to save her, but also with each other. And so it's really about kind of what happens when families face these sorts of situations, and really at heart it's about communication and about society and community culture. Hillary Clinton said, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, and I really believe that. I used an epigraph from Dostoevsky that says we're all responsible for all and for each other, and I think my feeling is that the community system in a lot of ways is, you know, kind of broken down over the last maybe 10 or 15 years, and in the sense that we all want to do the best for our kids, you know, and so parents end up in this kind of competition about, you know, and are very, very fiercely protective of their children, understandably. They want them to, you know, succeed, et cetera, et cetera. And so a lot of times what ends up happening is that when families do have problems, they're just ostracized instead of the community kind of pulling together and sort of helping them as maybe they did in the old days. You know, they really don't do that anymore. And so that's really what the book is about.
Well, you know, it's classified as fiction, but it doesn't sound like very fictional to me, because it really does sound like this could be any family in the United States, or, you know, Canada, or, you know, the Western world, or maybe, mm-hmm. you know, other countries as well. It really does sound like you have captured, you know, a normal family going through some issues and situations with their children.
That, you know, it's really interesting that you say that, especially, you know, as in terms of it not being fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of readers write to me, and I've actually had a number of psychotherapists write to me and say, you know, you really hit this on the nail. I see this all the time in my practice. I wrote the novel the first draft of the novel, believe it or not, about 15 years ago. And at the time, my kids were teenagers, and this is sort of the thing that I was seeing going on a lot with kids. And so it was, I saw a lot of competition, and that really bothered me. It bothered me that I know there was a young person that one of my daughters went to school with, and she was this person was getting in trouble, and so. But the principal of the school, instead of, you know, sort of rallying and saying, okay, you know, we're going to help this kid, we're going to try to put her back on track, he said something to the effect of, you know, we're really embarrassed of you and we wish you weren't part of our school, or, you know, something.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, and that is just kids where there were these zero tolerance policies, which I do understand. I do. Nobody wants to see their kids drinking and doing drugs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of, again, instead of supporting the kids, they get thrown off teams,
yeah.
Which is one of the things that happens to Leah in this book. I know. I've talked to parents whose child was on a sports team and was caught in a photograph that was posted on Facebook. I actually stole this from me. It's like, caught in a photograph, you know, really, you know, and the photograph posted on Facebook, but the school monitors Facebook, and this boy was thrown off of his. He was a captain of, I think, maybe the baseball team, and he was thrown off. You know, and I just think, gosh, what are we doing to these kids?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's sad, isn't it? It is so sad. And let's just talk about, I'm sure that many families, and I'm sort of relating back to my kids are in their early 40s, but it wasn't that long ago when they were teens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our daughter and our son, too, I felt that they were got themselves into some bad relationships. And, you know, I don't think it was any different then than it is now. And so let's talk about handling. You know, what is the best way for a parent to handle it if they feel that the boyfriend or the girlfriend just aren't acceptable?
Gosh, that's really tough.
It is.
I'm just a parent, you know. I mean, I'm not an expert in this.
Right. You know, I know.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think I really believe that the best thing that parents can do is just, you know, kind of communicate with their kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it's this tough line, you know, because you want them to do the right things and we expect a lot from them and so on. And so we want to keep them on track. And at the same time, you know, we don't want them to be so lax that they just kind of go off and do whatever they want, you know, so you're always walking that line. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, because my kids did too, when
mm-hmm.
my daughters, when they were teens, had bad relationships too, and I know if I stepped in and tried to say, I don't want you to see him anymore, which I did do a few times,
mm-hmm.
That didn't work. You know, I promise you that did not work.
Yeah.
You know, that just sort of pushes them closer. And
exactly.
You know, so in my experience, it's really, and this is so tough, I think, for parents, especially if you see the kid and you think, wow, that young man or young woman is dangerous. You
mm-hmm.
know? I think the best thing is to keep communication open, keep close to your child, and just kind of wait it out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then waiting seems to be, you know, we get very impatient as parents because, you know, we see what's happening, and I'm just reflecting back to my own daughter, and, you know, she got into this relationships, and then it was drugs, and then it was alcohol, and then she wasn't even looking after herself, and she was going to school at that time, and the grades were falling back, and she was getting in trouble at school, and so it's like, what do? You know, do you handle this to yourself, or do you actually get help, and where is the help, and who can help?
You know, I'm not sure about if this is really the case anymore. I sort of hope it's not, but, you know, I remember when my kids were growing up, therapists really kept the relationship with the child as opposed to with
mm-hmm.
the parent, you know, and so if the parent would try to step in and say, wait a minute, you know, this is going on, or that was going on, the therapist kind of shut them out, and I mean, I suppose you could do family therapy, but
mm-hmm.
if the child was in psychotherapy, it really shut the parent out, and I feel that that's detrimental in a lot of ways, because it's not just, I mean, one of my daughters was, this is sort of going off on a tangent, but it's kind of, it is related. Our oldest daughter went to a boarding school, and she, when she went to pick her colleges, they had a new college counselor at the time, our college, like a new guidance
mm-hmm.
counselor at the time. And his feeling was that the young person, they were, and I understand where he's coming from, they're older, they're 18, and they should be choosing their colleges themselves. And so he did not want any parental involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same thing was going on with therapists at the time. And I thought, as a parent, that's my job. You know, I need to have this communication. I need to have this link to my
mm-hmm.
child, you know. And so I think that that's one of the things that we always, in a sense, it's a challenge, I think.
It is a challenge. And, you know, we don't have parenting manuals. We don't know. And,
exactly.
you know, when we look at our own parents and grandparents and generations back, there were some imprints that were really instilled in us. And,
yes.
you know, some of their parenting skills weren't the best either.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what do we do? What we did is my husband and I actually went to see a therapist. It's because, you know, there was no point sending our daughter to the therapist because, you know, what's the point? It's like we were going to get shut out. So we went to the therapist ourselves. And I remember one thing that he said. And I was adamant somehow somebody said something, or I read in some self-help parenting book or something, that you have to treat your children the same so that they feel that they're equal. The therapist said, no, you can't treat them the same. They're two different personalities. You have to treat them according to their own personality. And then I got this big ding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, that these are two different kids.
Exactly.
We do have to treat them differently. We, you know, there's, of course, some equal things, yes, but not when it comes to situations. So that was a really interesting thing for me. And I think that this may be an issue in our society now, is not recognizing that each child has a different personality and sort of grouping them into one big lump group.
I think that's a really fantastic point. As a teacher, I've been teaching for a long time, 16 years, and
uh-huh.
You know, in the classroom, we do this. You know, we within a couple of weeks, we get to know the students and how to motivate them. I have some students that I really need to push. I have others I just need to say a little, you know, a few words to. I have
uh-huh,
some
uh-huh.
students who respond really well to, you're going to get F if you don't do this.
Uh-huh.
And others who respond better to, you know, you're doing a really great job, keep it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, as long as you get the result, you know, they are really different. And I think
uh-huh.
you make it such a great point because we can't. You're right. We can't lump them all together.
No, we can't. And, you know, our society seems, it tends to do that. And like
mm-hmm.
to say, you know, you're a teacher, obviously, that recognizes this. Not every teacher recognizes it, even though it's probably someplace in the training it was explained that way. But I don't believe that every teacher in the public school system does recognize that. And, you know, there's time and, you know, there's not enough time to do. And so it's just like rush, rush, rush. And there's certain standards to be met. And, you know,
absolutely.
I know teaching is a thankless job, that is for sure. So now, you know, in some cases, now I want to just back to our daughter. She's a fantastic person now. She got through those
yes.
teen years. She got through all that
yes.
stuff. She is alcohol-free, drug-free. She's got a runs her own health clinic.
Yes.
She is well-known in the community and, you know, in other states. And, I mean, she's done very, very well. So it was just that little part that we had to get through. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are, Terry, on, you know, parents. I mean, there are good parents, and then there are just some parents that, well, they don't have those parenting skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wonder, you know, what happens to those kids?
You know, I think that's a, first of all, that's all, your daughter's success is obviously a credit to you, and that's really, really wonderful.
Well, thank you.
You know, I think that it's, I had a friend, again, while my children were growing up, and this woman was older than I, and she was a guidance counselor in my daughter's school, and we ran together. And so I got to know her fairly well, and she was just the most wonderful person.
Mm-hmm.
She was centered. She was balanced. She had four children, three daughters and a son. The three daughters were, so I was in my 30s at the time, and her daughters were about my age. And they were successful. They were lovely, lovely people. Her son, the youngest, was a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he was in and out of jail, and he would get clean, and then he would go back again. And I remember her husband would leave money in the front seat of the car in the hopes, knowing that there's someone come by at night and break into the car. You know, and so I think that while I feel sad for kids who have, you know, there are also the really awful parents, you know, who open the doors and let their kids. I mean, I've heard of parents, you know, smoking weed with their kids, like, who does that, you know? I guess, I don't know, I'm not to be judgmental myself. But, you know, I mean, I think that these sorts of problems really happen to all families, and not just the ones that have the bad kids, and that have the bad parents.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, I've seen some parents that some parenting that I thought, oh my gosh, is that kid ever going to grow up? And you know, the kids turned out really well. So
yeah,
you just don't know. I mean, I remember thinking, gosh, if I could just turn the clock ahead 10 years, and know everything would be fine. You know, I wouldn't worry at all. But
yeah,
I guess I don't mean to avoid the question. I feel that these sort of problems, I think one of the things that people don't recognize is that these problems really do happen to great families.
Yes.
And so I hope that people will maybe suspend judgment a little, you know, give them a shot.
You know, I so agree with you. I so agree. I think a lot actually has to do with the child's personality.
Absolutely.
And, you know, upbringing definitely has a lot to do with it and
sure.
Imprints. However, I think as human beings, we have the capability of making choices.
Mm-hmm.
And some are able to make choices and some can't. And I think that,
absolutely.
You know, it's all about choice, and I really think that the kids, too, once they, you know, teens are, it's just really hard because here you are, you know, you're not sure what side of the fence you're on. You're, you know, let's say you're 16, and maybe you're, at some points, you feel like an 8-year-old, and other points, you want to be like a 21-year-old, and, you know, it's like you're vacillating back and forth, and it's a really tough stage to be in.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Yeah.
And to go along with or to add on to what you said, I think that there's a lot. So we have 4 grandchildren now, and I've watched them really with interest because, you know, it's so different when they're not your children.
Yep.
And I see them, and I remember the oldest one, my daughter, when my daughter was pregnant, you know, he moved a lot, and he was, you know, and from the minute he was born, he was a very demanding, I mean, he's a love, but he was a very demanding child.
Sure.
And now he's 5, and he's still a very demanding child.
Yeah.
And I think my daughter's a great mom, but there's this nature component to it, and he's extremely athletic and very aggressive. But his brother, his younger brother, is very laid back, much more interested in, you know, he knows the names of all the dinosaurs, you know, that sort of thing. And and so I think that there is that nature component, too, that we forget sometimes. And, you know, which is one of the reasons I think that I can't help but feel that, yes, there's absolutely parenting involved, and I think that great parenting can make tremendous difference for a child who's troubled or has certain personality traits. But I think it's important to remember that sometimes some of this behavior is nature.
I agree. And it's up to the parent to be able to handle it, learn, you know, get some tools and be able to flow with it, you know, and guide, actually. Exactly. It's hard. And
we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through Direct Podcast, as well as MP3 download for your convenience. please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Terry Giuliano Long. She is the author of In Leah's Wake. And hey, as you've heard so far, we are talking up a storm, aren't we? So please continue, because there's just so much more. Now, with the economy as it is, and a lot of parents have to work one or two jobs, they're stressful, they're away a lot, they come home, you know, a lot of the kids are latchkey. There were a lot of kids, you know, latchkey kids before, but I think that there are even more now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really, I think it's a mess, personally.
I agree with you, Irene.
Yeah. And it's hard, and it takes a tribe to raise a family, and I so agree with that. However, the tribe gets diminished when everybody in the tribe has to work two jobs.
Yes, yes. I think another problem, too, is that, you know, and again, I mean, I think there are a lot of great things that are going on, and I don't mean to be so negative, but I think that one of the problems is that in the past, families kind of stayed together. You know, my children right now, my husband and I are living in Vermont. I have one daughter. We're on the West Coast right now visiting her. She's in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I have a daughter in Virginia. I have a daughter in Maine and a daughter in Massachusetts.
There you go.
You know, and they're all doing their thing. And the one in L.A. was here for grad school. The one in Maine is there for grad school. One is in Virginia for work. And so you have this separation of families where even when my kids were growing up, they saw my sisters and brothers frequently, my parents frequently. But you lose that kind of support system. And I can't help but think that the community, when so many people are sort of thrown together, there's so much movement within the community. And again, I think the upward mobility is great, but you lose that sort of center, that moral center, that ethical center that everybody kind of agrees on. Everybody sort of watches out for each other's kids, you know. And but as communities break down, I agree with you. And with everybody working, it's tough.
It is tough. It is tough. I would like to talk a little bit about your book and, well, actually a character in the book, the 12-year-old. Now, you know, we've got this 16-year-old who supposedly has the issues. She's got this boyfriend, and, you know, he's a roadie. He's a high school dropout. The parents aren't very happy. And then all of a sudden this 12-year-old that wants to fix it. And I think that we've got a fixer in every family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there again, the 12-year-old who wants to fix it, she's actually sitting back and looking at this. And I'm sure on one hand, idolizing the sister, you know, because, wow, she can do all these things and she's got this boyfriend and it's just really cool, you know.
Yes.
Roadie for a rock band. I mean, wow.
Right.
Is there anything else that a person can do except be a roadie for a rock band? But then she sees all the commotion going on, and I'm sure, I know that, as you say, that this is a fiction, but this is in reality, too, and I can only imagine that most families have that child.
I think so. I agree. I really think so. And I was my youngest daughter was really enthralled with her older sister, with my
sure.
daughter. And, you know, I mean, we had challenges like any family. It was nothing like the Tylers, thank God. But, you know, the younger one really did look up to the older one. And I think that in a lot of ways that bond can be really, really strong. And, yeah, I agree. I've seen a lot of families, too, where somebody does want to be the fixer, and I think a lot of times it probably is a younger child.
It usually is, and, you know, there again, the birth order.
Yes.
The kids are, you know, in birth order have specific roles that they play.
For sure.
And, you know, especially if they have a tendency to be the fixer, the helper, the caregiver, the caretaker,
yes.
you know, then they will have that tendency, and when they can't fix the problem as they see it, then they start reacting.
Absolutely.
And so let's say, like, this 12-year-old in your book, she sees the 16-year-old and idolizes all the things that she's doing, but yet feels, you know, she needs to fix it. When she can't fix it, then what? You know, go into depression, start using drugs yourself, find a roadie.
Right,
you know?
right. The 12-year-old in the book is, she's a precocious kid, so she constantly is trying, and it takes a long time for her to, she internalizes a lot. You know,
exactly.
And when her sister really acts out and Leah runs away later in the book, and when that happens, Justine is just distraught. You know, she's thinking, well, what did I do? You know, am I part of this? Is she angry with me? And so I think that kind of internalization, and sometimes it does. I mean, in this case, Justine doesn't get into drugs herself, but she certainly does have some. She does get into to sort of take out her frustrations on herself, I guess would be a good way of putting it.
But in reality, well, yes, you know, and I know that there are some kids that are that way too. On the opposite end of it too, I know that there are kids in that age group that when they internalize, they, you know, feel the pain, and then in order to suppress that pain, then they often use substances to suppress that pain because, as you know, but then we feel better. And so, you know, it's just a really vicious circle, and as parents, it's really sometimes hard to recognize, especially if, you know, holding down two jobs, for instance. It's just like, you know, we're trying to keep everything together, and yeah.
I think also, as parents of teens, and this is my own experience, and also I've talked to other people about this way, that it's just, as you pointed out, it's such a turbulent time in their lives. My opinion is they're rebelling. Yes, that's their job.
Yeah.
You know, as teens. I mean, we are supposed to raise kids who are independent and creative, you know, or at least independent. And part of independence is striking out on your own. And sometimes that means rebelling against your parents.
Yeah.
But I think when that happens, we as parents have an idea of what we want for our children, and we might say, you know, this is what we want for them, and maybe supporting what they said they want. But when we start to see them going off that path, it's darn scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think a lot of the problems that parents face, or at least I remember when my kids were growing up, I think a lot of my turmoil came from just being scared. Are they going to be okay?
Yeah.
You know, whatever the situation was, are we going to get through this? Is she going to end up going to college? Thankfully, they all did. They all graduated.
Mm-hmm.
They're all doing very well. But you don't know. You know, some kids, I think almost, I shouldn't say every, because I have seen a few who haven't, but I think for the most part, most children rebel at some point, and today it may be a little bit later than it was. Leah may be a little bit on the young side, actually, today, because parents do take greater control over the kids. You know, you have this whole helicopter parenting thing, but you know, the hard part about it, at least from what I can see and what I've seen in schools, when kids don't rebel when they're teenagers, they do in college, and then there's no one there to pull back.
Exactly. Yeah, and, you know, they're on their own, and they make their choices.
Right, exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And at that point, those choices can be a whole lot more dangerous.
They can be. And it just, you know, as you're talking here, and I'm thinking, the number of suicides, the number of, that has happened lately, the number of, let's say, you know, of killings in colleges and that. And so I kind of wonder, you know, what happened to these kids? What happened when they were teens? What happened when they were, you know, in families?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. And there again, it could be just back to their personality. It could be such a same thing as your 12-year-old in your book. You know, she was a fixer and she couldn't fix it. And so that suppressed anger maybe, or internalizing, you know, the fear or whatever they are. Or incompetence, you know, sometimes these kids would feel very incompetent if they can't fix it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think also sometimes it's just kids who are good kids.
Yeah.
And they've been brought up by under very strict rules,
mm-hmm.
and they've followed all the rules their whole life, you know, much like Leah does in the book, except,
sure.
again, she's younger. But now they get to college, you know, they've always been on the sports team, they've been maybe captain, and they've won awards, and gosh, the things these kids have to do just to get into school today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they get to college, and suddenly there's no parent around.
Yeah.
Suddenly they're on their own, and it's very easy. A lot of college campuses, you know, we like to think that, colleges are working very hard to try to put a lid on the drinking in
mm-hmm.
colleges,
because mm-hmm.
it was really bad for a while. But suddenly they get to college and there's really nobody there. And one of the things that I've noticed, and this certainly isn't true across the board, but I've seen kids who really went out of control in high school, and then by the time they were in college, they said, okay, it's out of my system.
Right.
I'm settled down, and they do just fine, you know. And other kids who are just
mm-hmm.
at the top of their class get to college, and suddenly, you know, they just go wild.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I mean, I don't mean to be the, you know, bearer of bad news. I think there are a lot of great
yeah.
kids, and I think many, many, many more of them end up like your daughter,
daughters,
and they figure it out. You know?
Exactly. They do figure it out. There's something happens, and it's like almost like a spiritual awakening or something.
Yes. Yeah.
And the shift happens.
Yes. It does. It does.
And so there's always that hope to look forward to.
Yes, yes. I think that's one of the things, you know, when I talk to parents, I always try to stress, because it's in my book, and in, you know, when you start talking about these things, it
mm-hmm.
really seem gloom and doom. And, you know, to a parent, when you're going through it, it is. It feels that way.
Oh.
You know, but really, truly, there's the vast majority of them do. As you said, there's a shift.
Yeah.
They grow up, and then...
Yeah,
they get back on track and they do what they need to do.
Exactly. I remember many times thinking, oh, when will these kids ever grow up?
Right, right, right.
And then guess what? They grew up.
Yeah.
And one day, my daughter is 40 years old and I'm thinking, what happened? I only feel like I'm like 40-something-ish.
Oh, my gosh, don't I know it.
And... like, here I've got this young woman, you know, as a daughter, and I've got this young man as a son, and it's like, oh, what happened? They actually did grow up. I could hardly wait until they grew up, and then all of a sudden I realized that, you know, let's say my daughter was, the day she turned 40, and that really hit me, because
mm-hmm.
I somehow lost something. Not that, you know, not that I felt old, but I just... thought I was just a few years older than 40. Well, gosh, Terry, this is a really good book, and I think that...
Oh, thanks, Irene. I really appreciate it.
Well, what you do is you really capture what, you know, society, really. Although, as I mentioned earlier, this is a fictional book, but, you know, is it really? Is it really? I think that probably many, many parents could relate to it and parallel some of the situations that you write about. And I really encourage the listeners to check this out.
Thank you.
We were, by the way, we were talking about In Leah's Wake, and the author is Terry Giuliano Long. So please do check it out. Terry, any last-minute comments to our listeners?
I would just, first of all, I'd like to thank you for having me. This has been really fun. This has
yeah.
been a really fun conversation. I told you before we started that I was really nervous, and but I really enjoyed talking with you. And I would just like to say to your listeners, thank you for giving me your time. It's so hectic and crazy, and I know how busy people are, so it
yeah.
really means a lot to me that people are, you know, taking the time to listen. So I just want to say thank you.
And thank you, and Terry, tell our listening audience your website address.
Oh, it's www.tglong.com.
That's spelled T as in Terry, G as
mm-hmm.
Giuliano, with a G,
yeah.
LONG.com.
Yes, and if I may add,
sure.
would it be, my blog is terryglong.com/blog, and beginning on April 23rd, we are sponsoring a week-long book club week. And each day we're going to have questions very much like the kinds of questions that you asked me and the issues that we talked about. And so we're hoping that people will kind of get involved and talk about these really, I think, very important social issues. And we'll have a lot of fun events and things like that, too.
Okay.
But if people are interested in discussing these kinds of questions, then please come to the blog.
Great, great. Again, listeners, this has been fun. And, you know, it really kind of stops